Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Until now, we talked all about Achashverosh. And now we're going to get to his partner in crime, Bonnie and Clyde, Achashverosh and Vashti. They're in this together. Daf Yud Beis, Amud Beis. Big folio pages of the Gemara. We're on page 12. Side 2. The last thing we learned about was how Achashverosh had this amazing party. Actually, we're going to start off on side A, in the very bottom of side A. Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph on the very bottom. And then we'll turn on to side 2. So the Gemara says, when we open the Megillah, in the 9th verse of chapter 1, the Megillah says, after telling us about Achashverosh's party and all the things that Achashverosh did at this inaugural ball, alongside Achashverosh, says the Megillah, Gam Vashti Hamalka Osisa Mishtei Noshim. Vashti the queen, she also made a party. She made a party for the women. Okay. So what's wrong with that? So the Gemara says, Gam Vashti Hamalka Asasa Mishtei Noshim. But where did Vashti make her party? Beis Hamalchus. She made her party in the seat of monarchy. She made her party in the male quarters. In other words, in those days, in the etiquette of Persia of the time, Achashverosh, or the king, had his quarters. And the queen, Vashti, or the woman, had their quarters, separate quarters. So Vashti should have been making a separate party. It doesn't say there was a party and Vashti joined her husband. It says, Gam Vashti Hamalka, Osasa Mishtei Noshim. Vashti also made a party. So there was Achashverosh's party, and there was also Vashti's party. If there's also Vashti's party, that's indicative of a separate location. Achashverosh made his party, and Vashti made a separate party. That's what it sounds like. Gam Vashti. She also made a party. You're going to make a party. I make a party too. Why only you make a party? But then, right after that, it says, and where was the party? Gam Vashti Amalka Asas on Mishtei Noshim. Where did she make it? It doesn't say Mishtei. It says Mishtei Noshim. She made a woman's party. If Achashverosh was serving single malt, she was serving chocolate liqueur. That's one of the Mefarshim talks. Manas Halevi talks about that. He said, It's different food. You know, the guys they wanted steak and beer, and it's a guy party. And the women were having finer food, delicacies. So Vashti makes a party, and the party is different because it's Gam Vashti. It's like a competing entity, a competing ball. And where is it? Beis HaMalchus. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? Beis HaMalchus? She made it in the king's quarters? It should have been Beis HaNoshim Yibayalei. That should have been in the female quarters. So if there would be one party, it's one party. Okay, fine, that's one party. It's co-ed, everything gets done together. It's a social event, as it is in the Western world. But in the Eastern world, it wasn't like that. In the Eastern world, the queen had her own residence. There was the queen's residence, there was the king's residence. Two separate places. She had her own palace. She had her own servants. She did her own thing. You know, today in the White House, there's a chief of staff, and the First Lady also has a chief of staff. Of course, she has to be in the White House to begin with, but that's assuming that she's in the White House and is interested in doing this role. They also have a competing role. Now, the reality is that we still don't know what it would be like to have a first guy in the White House and what that competing role would look like. but it's a different role. The president does his thing, and the First Lady does her thing. So that's not so different. Achashverosh did his thing. This was a political party. Everything about this party was politically driven. Achashverosh is trying to please everybody. Achashverosh is trying to ensure that everybody will be loyal to him. He's trying to root out any kind of disloyalty or any kind of rebellious reality so that all of the leadership, all the governors, all the premiers of every one of the provinces, they were all at this party, all 127 of them. They were all being wined and dined. Why was Ahasuerus doing this? Very simple, because he wanted to get all the people with power and influence on his side. He wanted to curry favor with them. That's why he did this. That's what his party was all about. This is a calculated effort to be able to develop friendships and loyalties. So Ahasuerus was interested in doing his thing. This was his guy bonding party. So Vashti said, I'll also make a party. And in general, the Mefarshim say that Vashti made a profound mistake about her position. You see, Vashti came from royal blood. She had royal lineage. Vashti was the daughter of Belshazzar, granddaughter of Elvil Merodech, and the great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, founder of the Babylonian Empire. In Vashti's mind, how could Ahasuerus be a king? His father was a stable master. A king? How does a stable master be a king? Eved ki yimlech, a servant becomes a master, becomes a king. She said, ha, he married me, that's why. Since he married me, I made him into a king. I gave him this whole legitimacy. But she was wrong. Because the truth is that when her father was captured, his head didn't stay on the shoulders very long. He was brutally murdered, or killed, whoever you want to call it, by the invading armies. Darius came in, and he destroyed Belshazzar's family. And Vashti was a little orphan, and cowering in the corner. And he had rachmanis on her. He felt bad for her. He decided not to kill the little kid. She was a teenager. He didn't kill her. But she had no value. She was a nobody after this. It's like when the Tsar was deposed. Would his daughter be feted by Lenin, by Stalin? They were persona non grata. And the truth is that Darius and Koresh, these were the kings, the Median kings, the Persian kings, that built the empire on the backs of the erstwhile Babylonian empire. They had no value, no time, and no patience of Vashti. They could care less about her. But Ahasuerus had an eye for beauty, and he did pick up Vashti. And he had his ruthless, unbelievable, insatiable ambition that said he set things in motion. And he picked himself up out of nowhere. And rose to this very, very prominent and powerful position to become the emperor, and he married Vashti. He actually restored Vashti to some kind of legitimacy of position. But Vashti was a very selfish person. She didn't understand that. She didn't appreciate that Ahasuerus had taken her out of the dumps and turned her into a somebody. In her mind, she was the heir to the throne. And it was she and her power and her lineage and her background that made Ahasuerus even capable of, so to speak, running for office. So Vashti came from a very different place. Ahasuerus made a party. She said, oh, I'll make a party too. Just he makes parties. He's gonna entertain the politicians. Oh, it's my politicians. So he invites the wives of all these kind of mini kings or governors, premiers. She says, come, I'll make a party too. And she made believe as if she was running a parallel government to her husband, trying to remind her husband, I put you in power, don't forget. Don't worry, I have this under control. But the question then comes, why Beis HaMalchus? Then if she was doing her own thing, she should have used her own quarters. Her quarters were palatial and luxurious enough. So Omer Rava, Rava says, and here you have stumbled upon the heart of the matter. This is a window into the profoundly immoral persona of Vashti and Ahasuerus, what they represented. The Gemara says, Amarava Shnehem, both Ledvar Aveda Niskavnu. Both had one thing in mind. What they had in mind was sin. They were sinful in nature. And they entertained sin. And they were happy to create a circumstance and a situation that could breed sin. When we say Aveda Stam, what are we talking about? So the Igra, the Pirka, says that Aveda Stam is the sin of licentiousness and the sin of adultery, sexual misconduct. That's Aveda Stam. That's what Aveda. Why? Igor de Pirka says because that's an Aveda that marshals every ounce of the person. It's something that takes over the person. And the interesting thing is that Western civilization, which is very sinful, actually agrees. There's a place in the United States which is referred to as Sin City. Sin City. I ask you a simple question, how come? Because the people gamble a lot. I've never been there, but apparently that's one of the many industries that's going on. Sin City is talking about another kind of immorality. It's not about It's not theft. It's not eating not kosher food. There's a whole different element. And that's come to mean sin. So Western cultural civilization kind of agrees with this idea. It's perfectly uncomfortable. Yes, that's the meaning of sin. So when you say sin, without adding any embellishment, what kind of sin? The assumption naturally is that this is the sin we're talking about. So, shneihem, both, gam Achashverosh, gam Vashti, both of these people who were together, the power couple, ledvar aveder neskavna, they had one thing in mind. It wasn't mitzvahs. It was sin. They wanted sin. And therefore, what did they do? Vashti said, I know where to make the party. I'll make it right where the guys are. And we'll do things that'll provoke and incite the Yetzirah, as they say. And this will create a situation that'll be a breeding ground that's ripe for sin. So this was all planned. This was all planned. Vashti, in her own devious way, went and planted the seeds for sin to ensue. And the Gemara says something unbelievable. You want to better understand this? Sometimes you have an aphorism or a phrase that kind of like, you know, it sizes things up. And oftentimes the Gemara will quote, this is what people say. It's not a per se a Torah thought, but it's what people say. And it's reflective of a Torah truth. So what did people say? Hai no damri inshi. This is what people say. They say, ihu bikore. He plays with big pumpkins. Ve'itze, and his wife, bibutzine, with little pumpkins. Big pumpkins and little pumpkins. Now, why do we talk about big pumpkins and little pumpkins? Why is this the terminology that the Gemara uses? So first of all, let's understand the literal meaning. Rashi says, ihu, he, bekare, Rashi says, dluin gdoilin. Large pumpkins. Pumpkins grow very big, you know. You want to go pumpkin picking? Very big pumpkins. Pumpkins grow very large, but pumpkins grow very small. You know, there's a certain time in October where you see pumpkins all over the place. You see monster pumpkins and little pumpkins. So he says, he played the last, Tana Rashi says. And she, on the other hand, was playing with little pumpkins. Rashi says, bubutzine, duluin ktanis, small pumpkins. What does this mean? Kiloimar, in other words, the ba'oisoi min atzmai. They're in the same industry. Same industry. Big pumpkins, little pumpkins. What industry are you in? Pumpkins. We sell the same product. And Rashi says, Zenayef, Achashverosh was an immoral person who looked for action wherever he could get it. Zenayefus. And she was exactly Zayin Efes. She was equally immoral. They each had various shenanigans going on. Neither was monogamous or loyal to each other. And that's the way Achashverosh and Vashti lived their life. This was natural to them. Now, it's interesting to point out that obviously all of this is from Hashem. All from Hashem. As the Iyun Yaakov says, he says, why did Hashem put this idea in their head? And why did she decide to make this party? After all, it's like a series of state dinners. It's not Las Vegas. It's supposed to be a little more dignified. It's supposed to behave, but it's a little more like self-respect. So Ian Yaakov says it's all about the fact that she wanted to ensure that the Beis HaMikdash would not be built. And Hashem had other Hashem decides otherwise. Precisely when she is intending to do something which is wholly and profoundly negative, Hashem ensures that it turns out positive. Well, not for Vashti, but for us, for the Jewish people. The Ma'am Loyaz quotes, I think, the Manus Halevi in the Al-Sheikh. He says an amazing thing. He says, Vashti was concerned only that the Jewish men would sin. What about the Jewish woman? We need the women to sin too. This doesn't say this, but I'm going to read into this and try to understand it better. When it came to the fashioning of a golden calf, which Jews were involved? Only men. And when it came to the Mishkan, who was front, right, and center? The women. The Jewish women. And then when it came to not going into Eretz Yisrael, who didn't want to go? Who wanted to stay behind in the desert? The men. Who was willing to go? The women. Who died in the desert? The men. Who didn't die? The women. They got into Israel. Achashverosh wants to prevent two things from happening. Number one, he doesn't want the Jews to go home to Zion. He doesn't want them to go home to Yerushalayim. He doesn't want them to leave their places that they have settled in exile. He wants them to remain in exile. Number two, he does not want that Beis HaMikdash to be built. In fact, much later on in the Megillah, when Esther comes to plead the case of her people, and Achashverosh initially wants to have her killed like he had Vashti killed, he says to Esther, I'll give you whatever you want. Suddenly he's like infatuated, overwhelmed. He says, I'll give you ad chatzi ha-malchus, up to half the kingdom. What does it mean? What's half the kingdom? So the Gemara says, chatzi ha-malchus, up to half. You know, I got to stay 51%. I'm still the major shareholder. Up to half. The Gemara says something else. Not something which will divide my kingdom. Not something which will be a sty in the eye of my kingdom. What will divide my kingdom? He said to her, no Beis HaMikdash. Whatever you want, but no Beis HaMikdash. The one thing Achashverosh didn't want to see was the Beis HaMikdash go up. Because Achashverosh was convinced that if the Beis HaMikdash went up, his empire would decline. Because then Jerusalem becomes the center of the world again. So Vashti, it's personal pride. After all, it's her great Zevi who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, her great grandpa, Nebuchadnezzar. And it's Evil Merodach who continued to promulgate the Nebuchadnezzar's purges. And it continues to subjugate the Jewish people to all kinds of inappropriate things. And after all, it was Belshazzar who made this wrong calculation and went prancing around in the Kohen Gadol's clothing. And that was, of course, the last time he got dressed up, because the next day he was dead. So this is personal. Vashti needs to see the Jews fail. She was a rabid anti-Semite. She hated Jews with a passion. In fact, the Medrash tells us that Vashti used to force the Jewish girls who worked for her. She'd force them to come on Shabbos. And the first thing she would do is make them take their clothes off, which could mean on a very simple level, take the Shabbos clothes off. She put them in dungarees. She did everything she could to abuse them. According to another opinion, matters literally. She made them work. She stripped them to strip their dignity from them. Made them work naked in her house. So Vashti was a person who hated Jews. It was in her blood. She had it genetically. Her great-grandfather hated Jews, her grandfather hated Jews, her father hated Jews, and probably the mothers were no different to the grandmothers. So Vashti now sees, she understands, she was a very smart lady, very sly, very clever. She knew what Achashverosh was doing. Remember, last week we learned to don't give him too much to drink. If you give him too much to drink, so then they do sins, they behave immorally, so I was drunk. They didn't know what I was doing. So don't give him too much to drink. Because this one, if they do a sin, they'll be fully culpable. So Vashti knows this. And Vashti wants to make sure that the Jewish people sin. But she doesn't just want the Jewish men to sin. Then she could have done that easily. She wants the Jewish women to sin. So what's she going to do? Well, she makes a party and she invites them. What were the Jews thinking at this time? We need to curry favor. We need to do what the king and queen are asking of us. There are king and queen. And this is a political necessity. Maybe Shabbat, may not be Shabbat. They may be wearing fancy clothes in the Beis HaMikdash. According to one Medrash, Vashti were also clothes in the Kohen Gadol. And it may be that they're using the Caleb in the Beis HaMikdash, but we need to do this. We need to keep our lines of communication open. We need to make sure that we're on good terms with them. So we'll violate Judaism a little. So Vashti invites all the Jewish women, the high society, the Jewish high society, all the females are there too. And then Vashti takes them on a trip. And she brings them to the palace and says she exposes them to all kinds of intimate details of her and Achashverosh's life together. Here's where he sleeps and here's where he this and here's where he that. And it was supposed to be a mingling and a mixing. And Vashti's hope is not only will the Jewish men sin, as Achashverosh had wanted, but she can get the ladies to sin too. And then when the ladies sin too, then we can be sure no Beis HaMikdash should be rebuilt. So this is the thinking behind, and that's the meaning of Ledvar Avedo Niskavno. So what is the Gemara says? How does the Gemara metaphorize it? The Gemara says that this one used large pumpkins, and this one is dealing small pumpkins. Or as they say in the modern vernacular, small potatoes, big potatoes. I guess pumpkins were like potatoes once upon a time. Today we used potatoes and they used pumpkins. Of course, what does this mean? Why is Achashverosh the big pumpkin here and Vashti the small pumpkin here? What's up with the pumpkins? Why does he get big pumpkins and she gets small pumpkins? So the Sifsei Chacham says, in his commentary on Rashi, he says that that's because when it comes to immorality, the men are always worse. There are more male philanderers than female philanderers. Much more common. So Achashverosh was a philanderer. He slept with all kinds of people. That was the way of life. Vashti did it too, but he was big pumpkins and she was small pumpkins. He was a bigger sinner. Much more so than Vashti. And that's why he sins. But they're in the same industry. They make a difference. They're both philanderers. They're both disloyal to each other. They both were sinful people. They were both deviants. They were both seeking sensual pleasure and libido at any cost. And they had no morals. They had no character. That was irrelevant to them. So that's one way of understanding this. Another way of understanding it is that there's the small pumpkins are covered with like larger leaves, not as open. And the large pumpkins kind of they transcend the leafy frame and they're more in the open. And it goes along the lines of what Sifsei Chacham says. He says that the men were more open about their sins. They didn't even try to hide it. The women try to play the game, hide it. I personally, my hunch is that Hillary is no more moral than Bill is. But Bill got caught. He's more open about it, that's all. I think they both did shenanigans. I don't know what kind of shenanigans. I don't want to know what they did, but this is when I think of this couple, this power couple of immoral people, him dealing with big pumpkins, small pumpkins, that's my modern equivalency is exactly what we had, you know, in the 90s in the White House. Anyway, I hope not offending anybody with that, but that's just, you always have to have like an image, like that's my image. So we have big pumpkins, small pumpkins, more open, less open. Bottom line is, they were in the same industry. And in this industry, they were looking for sin. And Rashi says something very interesting. Hu oimer lahares es yofyo. He said, come and strut your stuff. Come show off your beauty. Come show everybody how amazing, what an amazing body you have. Vehi lekach neskavna. That's, she actually wanted that. But she wasn't wanting to do it in a demeaning way. She dressed very provocatively. She wanted everybody to look at her. But not the way Achashverosh wanted her, like a tabletop dancer. She wanted her a little more like she was calling the shots. She was in control of the situation, and she would be playing with everybody. But instead, it went the other way around. So that's the big potato, small potato paradigm. They all actually had the same thing in mind. It didn't work out in the end of the way. But Achashverosh wants everybody he wants to show off his wife. She wants to show herself off. That's what we're dealing with. The Gemara says, in the very next verse, after speaking about this concept of that both of them were l'shem aveda niskavna, both of them sought the same thing, that both Vashti and Achashverosh wanted to create a situation of sinfulness, and especially with regard to the Jewish people, and that's why everything was brought about. That's why Vashti makes the party. That's why she brings everybody in. She says, "Come, come, we're going to go over here. Here's where the party's going to be." And amazingly, just interesting to point out that the Manas Halevi says, and the Mishkanes Yankev, he says, Vashti's intention was that the Beis HaMikdash should never be rebuilt. That was her intention. How? By getting everybody to sin. Getting the Jewish women to sin too. Because as I started saying before, if the men would sin, but the Jewish women wouldn't sin. Okay, we have an old paradigm for this. So in the end, the Jewish women carry the day. So this time Vashti wanted to make sure that the Jewish woman would be just as guilty, just as sinful. And that was her guarantee to break the cycle of history. The Jewish people should not be able to overcome sin. They should not be able to experience rehabilitation because the woman will sin too. So this was all about not letting the Beis HaMikdash be built, says the Manas Yankev. And guess what happened? Precisely because of this plan with Vashti's monster ball, which is all about creating immorality, a sin city party, what happened in the end? Could anybody have predicted? You think Vashti knew that in the end she was going to have her head handed to her? Of course not. It didn't work out the way she planned. Yes, there was immorality, not the kind she was hoping for. And in the end, she's killed. Because she's killed, what happens? Esther becomes the queen. And because Esther becomes the queen, eventually Darius is born. Who's Darius? That's the very individual who not only gave permission to build the Beis HaMikdash, but actually provided significant funding from the Persian royal coffers to build a second Beis HaMikdash. So we see here Hashem's like sense of humor, if you will. She planned to destroy, to keep the Beis HaMikdash never from never being rebuilt, and exactly from this very party, it was a total reversal of roles, exactly the opposite, which fits very snugly into the whole paradigm of Purim, which is all v'nahapechu. In Purim, everything is upside down. Exactly the opposite. But once again, here's another detail of just exactly the opposite. From this party, not only was the Beis HaMikdash's building not impeded, it was from this party that the Beis HaMikdash's building actually was catalyzed. It's because of this event that Vashti's killed, and then, you know, as the rest, as you know, is history. So, Bayoyim HaShvi, now the Megillah goes on to say in verse 10, on the seventh day, Bayoyim HaShvi, Ketoiv Lev HaMelech B'Yoyin, when the heart of the king is merry with wine. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. You tell me that there's a party for 7 days. It took Achashverosh 7 days to get drunk? What, was the guy some kind of fiend? Some kind of a monster? How did he contain wine? He contained 7 days of continuous drinking, and he didn't get drunk till the seventh day? What does that mean? It says it was Mishtah Yoyin. It says his heart was merry with wine. It took 7 days for his heart to get merry with wine? How impervious could he be to alcohol? Why did it take so long? So the Gemara's answer, very interesting. The Gemara says, you know what it means? I'll explain it to you. Amar Rava, Rava says, Yoim HaShvi. It doesn't just say, but Yoim Shvi, took 7 days. Yoim HaShvi, the seventh day. What's the seventh day? Yom HaShvi, this is Shabbos Hayo. Shabbos. Now there's a discussion whether this means maybe the first day, the second day. It was B'Yom HaShvi, me, on the seventh day for the Jewish people. Seventh day of the week, Shabbos. Or possibly it was the seventh day. The party started on Sunday and went all week, and it climaxed. It was B'Yom HaShvi on the seventh day. So on the seventh day, that was Shabbos. And so how does that answer the question? So the Gemara says that here the Torah emphasizes the difference between a wild frat party and a fabrengen. What happens when empty, vacuous, political animals get drunk, or when people who live with a fine purpose, mission, and meaning to life, the difference in Bnei Yisrael and the difference between Ha'amim. She Yisrael, the Jewish people also, we also say L'chaim. Eichlim, we party, we eat, v'sheisim, we drink on Shabbos. And then when people drink and people eat and their tongues are loosened, what do they talk about? Locker room talk? What do they talk about? What the Chassidim shouldn't talk about Fabrengen? I've been attending Fabrengens for, I don't know, almost 40 years. I never heard vulgarity by a Fabrengen. I can't tell you, everybody was always sober. I never heard vulgarity. You hear a deep and profound sentiment about Chassidus, God, Rebbe, Mitzvahs, Torah. What happened over here? Over here is the polar opposite. Bayidin, Selachayim, is B'divrei Torah, B'divrei Tishbaches, words of Torah, words of praise to Hashem, Avalev D'Gechavim, but the idolaters, Sha'echlim V'sheisim, they eat, they drink, they get drunk. A maschilin ela bedivrei tiflos. They begin with emptiness. Empty, vapid, vulgar speech. That's what happened. That's the Bayoyim HaShvi. Bayoyim HaShvi ketev lev melech hayo bayoyin. The Torah wants to contrast the way Bnei Yisrael behaved and the way Achashverosh v'chaverov, Achashverosh and his genre, his peers behaved. And according to some of the Midrashim, actually, this was in the same place. But there was some Jewish people who had one too many, if you will. And people did, but it was still Shabbos. So even, these are the sinful Jews. Even the Jews who went to that party, they went the second, this still was Shabbos. They sang some Shabbos songs. They became a little more seriously minded, because they behaved like Shabbos.
And contrasting, that's how the Yidden behaved. And what did Achashverosh do? What did his friends do? They began their vulgar speech. This is mamish, the locker room talk everybody was raving about a few months ago, and some people are still talking about. I don't know why, because one president says it, one president does it. Which is worse? In my book, the guy who rapes women is much worse than the guy who talks like a behemoth. But in this strange Orwellian world, it's worse that the guy says it and worse that the guy does it. But Achashverosh could be did both. But the bottom line is, this is a vulgar talk started to unfold. What was the vulgar talk? Now we're gonna come back to this Vayei Mashvi soon, but I want to just finish this sentence over here. So what was the vulgar talk? The vulgar talk was V'chein b'sidasi shel eshet asher. So it was at this ball of immorality, this sin city party of this wicked man. What do you think the talk was? Bunch of drunk, uncouth people, maybe very civilized, but spiritually uncouth, spiritually vapid, spiritually empty. What was the talk? Here's the talk, the locker room. Halalo, the Medians, the Madai people said, Madi is nice. The most beautiful women in the world are from Media. We have the best, the finest. We have, you know, use your imagination. And then the other one said, the Persians, because Media and Persia were always at each other's throats, always like in competition. This was like sharing, they were sharing the power, sharing the pie. We talked about that earlier, a few classes ago, this idea that whoever would be the king, if the monarch was Persian, then the cabinet and all the senior ministers and officers would be Median. And if the king was Median, all the senior officers in the cabinet and senate would be Persian. There was always like this, you know, like navy-army rivalry over here between whose nation goes first. So each one said, our women are the hottest. And the other one said, nah, our women are the hottest. And I'm being refined. It's probably much more vulgar than that. So each one, Amalehem Achashverosh said, you guys have nothing on me. Not the Persian, the Median woman, not the Median woman. He says, Kli Shani Mishtamish Bay. The vessel I use. Okay, you get an idea of the vulgarity. The vessel I use. My wife, he said. Ein Eloi Modai V'loi Parsi. She's not a Median. She's not a Persian. What is she? Elokazdi. She's Chaldean. She's a Babylonian. Babylonians is built in Chaldea. He said, my wife's a Chaldean, he says. And he said to them, Etzayinchim L'Reisa. You want to see a hot woman? He says, I'll show you my wife. He says, you guys have nothing on my wife. The locker room continues. So they go, yeah, sure. In, we'd love to see her. But obavacha tiruma, she's got to come nude. If she comes without clothes, no problem. Now, some of the mafarshim, it's like almost shocking. But really, it's not so shocking when you think about who Achashverosh was in the society which denigrated women and abused them. Which was a society at the time. Some of the mafarshim say that these guys actually got really nervous now because they realized the king is drunk and he was a little crazy. He's crazy as a fox, you know, a brilliant political operator, but also like an animal. And they said, you know what's going to happen? We're going to start prancing in with different ladies. He's going to decide he likes somebody else more, and either one of us will get killed or our wife's going to become his wife. So they figured we better put a stop to this now. It's at this point they realize this conversation is going in a very, very dangerous place. So they figured they'll raise the stakes, to make it impossible. They said, okay, no problem, sure we want to see her, but nude. And they say, she's never coming nude. He's never going to ask her to do that. And in this way, we'll kind of stop it right here. You know, let's stop while we're ahead. But it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that at all. In fact, Achashverosh presses forward, and of course, that's how the whole story unfolds. Now, with regard to this notion of Shabbos, so you'll see the Gemara is going to tell us later on that actually what happened to Vashti was a punishment for what she did to the woman on Shabbos, because she violated the Jewish woman, tried to rob them of their dignity on Shabbos. Her dignity was robbed on Shabbos, and Achashverosh saw a corollary. He felt like a fool afterwards. In his state of drunkenness, when he was acting like a lunatic, this seemed like a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But later, he felt like a total fool. He couldn't, you know, he was beside himself at what had happened over here. Now, according to the Ben Yehoyada, there was a big kitrug against the Jewish people for going to this party. So if there was a kitrug, if the Jewish people were doing a big sin, how is it that the same party becomes a source of salvation? This is not when they fasted, they prayed, and they did tshuva, they returned to Hashem. They're in the middle of sinning. So why would this sinful event provide the seeds for future redemption and salvation? So the Ben Yehoyada says that there was that Shabbos contrast. He says precisely because it was Shabbos, and the Jewish people kind of hung out together. It was still Shabbos. It was like a Shabbos atmosphere. And that's being contrasted with his vulgar atmosphere. Now, with regard to the idea that it took 7 days to get drunk, some of the Mefarshim explain this very simply. When you make a party, you don't really enjoy it, especially if you're worried about pleasing everybody. So Achashverosh wasn't really letting loose. The first 6 days, he was just buttering everybody up. Just going around to make sure, do you have enough to drink? Are you happy? Are you having a good time? He was engaged. He was dealing with his crowd. A week has gone by, a week of partying. It's the last day of partying. Achashverosh says, okay, it's time for me to party too. Enough already. I put enough of my time and energy in pleasing everybody else. I got to please number one. And please me too. And it was only at this point that Achashverosh really started to drink. Up until now, it was just a show. It was a charade. He wasn't really having fun. He walked around, he was drinking, backslapping, doing whatever the king had to do with all these other monarchs and princes and fancy people. But at this point, Achashverosh decided, now it's time for me to enjoy life too. And so, when he began to drink himself silly, and they joined him in drinking themselves silly, that's when this conversation ensued. So, did Achashverosh really ask her to come nude, or did they really ask her to come nude? Many of the Mefarshim say no. That's ridiculous. Why would the king want his wife to come nude? He said, come in a swimsuit. Come in your lingerie. He meant to say, they said to him, queen is beautiful. Sure, she's wearing like, you know, a $23,000 dress and a $40,000 crown and $200,000 of diamonds. Anybody would look good like that. He said, trust me, she doesn't even need that. She looks good if you stripped her down to her bare essence. She came in her underwear, she'd look good. They go, yeah, let's see. Let's see. If you say, because he was saying his wife is most beautiful. This is like a ridiculous, vulgar conversation. Whose wife is prettier? They say, you think your wife is the hottest of all? Then let's see, without all the accoutrements, without all the razzle-dazzle and bling of royalty, you bring her out just like that. So Achashverosh said, well, yeah, I can do that. And the Gemara says something amazing. You know what? This, that it happened to Vashti in this way, the way you measure, the way you get measured. And that's exactly, she got a taste of her own medicine, as they say in English. The way you treat others is the way you, in the end, are treated. How did she treat others? So the Gemara says, Melamed, this teaches us, Shehoisa Vashti Harisha, Vashti made a point of hiring Jewish women. I don't know if they got hired or coerced into doing work for her, but by royal edict, she had Jewish girls coming to her. And when these Jewish girls would come to her, she would try to rob them of their dignity. And how would she do that? Says the Gemara, Umafshitason, she would strip them. And she would leave them arumais, naked. She would rob them of whatever kind of dignity they had. And then she'd put them to work. She'd strip them like animals, naked, dehumanize them, and make them do work on Shabbos. This is Vashti. In some way, this is what the Nazis, that was their idea. They brought the Jews, and what did they do? First thing is to strip them of their own clothes, to dehumanize them. So Vashti didn't put them in a concentration camp. They went back home after a day's work. But to the day you're working, she stripped them like animals. And that's how she made them work. So in robbing them of their dignity and forcing them to work on Shabbos, that's exactly what Hashem did to her on Shabbos. She was robbed of her dignity. She was demanded that she be stripped in front of everybody. And Vashti all of a sudden wasn't ready to do this. And when she's not ready to do this, we'll see later in the Gemara, it's not so simple. She kind of was ready, but Hashem made sure she wouldn't be ready. And that's how her head was handed to her. That's how she was eliminated. The Gemara says, you should know, Haynu Dechsiv, this is the meaning of what says in the beginning of the second chapter of the Megillah. That it says, Achar Advarim Eila, after all this, Kishoich Hamas HaMelech HaChashverosh, when his enragement and fury subsided, and he felt like a fool, and all of a sudden, Zacharias Vashti. First, he felt all high and mighty, and he was, nobody's going to stop me. I'll take her out of here. I'll show her. I'll show everybody. No woman will get in my way. Yeah, and then he, so to speak, became sober. Not just from the alcohol that wore off, but he sobered up. After a little time went by, and he looked back. He said, "What a fool! What did I do?" He says, "Zacharias Vashti." He remembered Vashti fondly. The Eis Asher Asasa, and what she did, and what was decreed upon her. It's a very unusual expression. Zacharias Vashti, I get that. Asher nigzer aleha, what was decreed against her, I get that. What's the business with asher asasa? What's the business with what she did? I didn't understand that. So the Mefarshim say, in fact, she didn't do anything, was what she didn't do. She was asked to come and prance around naked, and she said, you're crazy, I'm not doing that. Who do you think you are? I put you in power. So, what do you mean, Asher Asasa? What do you mean what she did? It's what she didn't do. So why would those words be added in? It should say, Zacharias Vashti, Ve'etzashen Nigzer Aleha. He remembered Vashti. Maybe it should say, she says, Zachar, what who, Mash, who darash, what he demanded of her. What is Asher Asasa? So the Gemara is telling us, even Achashverosh realized the poetic hand of Hashem's justice. Zacharias Vashti, he remembered her ways. Ve'etzashen Asasa, what she used to do. What did she do? She robbed other women of their dignity. She forced them into a compromising position. She did to the Jewish girls. Kach, kishem shehi asasa. Just as she did to the Jewish girls. Kach, nigzer aleha. So too, it's what exactly what was decreed against her. So, in a deep way, we could add, like the Marsha says, what did she want? She wanted the Jewish women to sin. She wanted to cause their downfall. In the end, trying to cause everybody else's downfall, she caused her own downfall. She was seeking to prevent the Beis HaMikdash from being built, and she was seeking to make sure they would sin. They would compromise themselves by behaving inappropriately. And once they compromised, not that she would force them, they would compromise themselves. She created the environment that would force them to become compromised. And in the end, she was compromised. She wanted to rob them of life. Life, which is Yiddishkeit, of Torah mitzvahs. In the end, it was she who was robbed of her terrestrial life. And it was she who was put to an end. And so, we see that exactly what Ahasuerus had kind of realized, not only what happened, but exactly how this was in corollary with what Vashti herself had done with the way that she treated others. And so, in summation, the Gemara has introduced us to Vashti's party. We see now a perfect corollary. Just as Achashverosh very deviously wanted the Jewish men to sin so that Hashem would punish them and they would be prevented from returning to the Holy Land and the Beis HaMikdash never be built, Vashti had the exact same intention. And she did the same kind of things. And just as Achashverosh set up an environment with no coercion, just suggestion, power of a very suggestive, a very loose environment, which would naturally lead to sin. She did make a loose environment. She did create, she enraged and incited this locker room talk, but it ended very, very differently to what she imagined. In the end, she was not the one who was the victor, and it was not they who were the victims, but in the end, it was the Jewish people who were the victors. The very people she sought to compromise, in the end, saw her compromised, and ultimately, because of this story, Vashti is eliminated. This makes room for Esther, who will later become the queen, who will later become the one to influence her husband to turn the genocide inside out. Instead of us being harmed, our enemies are harmed. And the end of this trajectory, the end of the narrative, leads us into the return to Tzion and the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. That, my dear friends, is the story of Vashti's monster ball.